Okay, we continue in Sefer Shmuel, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tes Vov. Shmuel has just received the prophecy from Hashem that the house of Eli will not be forgiven by bringing korbanos forever. He heard that whoever hears this terrible, whoever will hear what's going to happen, ears are going to ring, where everything I said to the previous prophet that's going to be bad to the house of Eli is going to happen. And I've already told him that he's going to be punished, and this is the verification of that. Now, Hashem doesn't exactly go into the details of what will exactly happen, but it's a very fearful prophecy. Okay, so we pick it up on Pasuk Tesvav. Vayishkav Shmuel ad ha-boiker, and Shmuel, after hearing the prophecy, continued to lie in his bed until the morning. Vayiftach es dalsos beis Hashem, and he did his job as the Levi to open up the doors of the Mishkan. Shmuel yorei mahagida samara el Eli, and Shmuel was afraid to tell over the vision that he saw. He was afraid to tell it over to Eli. So, Malam explains, that explains his behavior. That Shmuel didn't tell Eli what happened first thing in the morning. You know, first of all, he didn't want to wake him up, or he didn't want to bother him at night. And then when he got up, he was busy with doing his work in the Mishkan. And the reason he didn't, was busy because he wanted to avoid Eli, because he didn't want to tell Eli such a bad news prophecy. Now, we know there's a rule that a prophet who withholds and refrains from telling over prophecy can be punishable by death. If he withholds telling over prophecy, like we found out by Yonah with the city of Nineveh. But the truth of the matter is that's only if Hashem tells the Navi to tell over the prophecy. Hashem did not tell Shmuel to tell over the prophecy. He just told him the prophecy. He said, I'm going to do this and this and that, and I swear that the house of Eli will not be forgiven. He didn't say, go over to Eli and tell him this. And Eli didn't tell him to tell it to him either. So therefore, you know, it was just something that Hashem said to him. And it was not a shlichus. It was not a job as a messenger to tell over what he saw. So he figured, no reason for me to tell it over. Let me just, I'll keep it to myself until I have to tell it over. So Pasuk Tazayin, Eli already is getting anxious to find out. Eli must have known that a prophecy was coming, but then again, Eli didn't hear the prophecy because his level of prophecy went down. Vayikra Eli es Shmuel, so Eli calls Shmuel. Vayomer Shmuel bini, he says, Shmuel, my son. Vayomer hinein, he says, here I am. And so I guess Eli could sense that there was a prophecy going on, even though he didn't know more than that. So in Yud Zayin, by Yomer, he says, Mo ha-dover asher diber elecha. What are the words that Hashem spoke to you? Al na sechached mimeni. Do not deny it from me. Ko yas elecha lokim v'cho yosif. Like this God will do to you, and like this God will continue. In other words, he's kind of saying, you know, bad things should happen to you. Im techached mimeni davor mikol ha-davor asher diber lecha. If you will hold back, deny anything from all the things which God spoke to you. So the Gemara learns a very interesting idea from here. And the idea is, the Gemara Makis, which we're going to get to in another, next week. We'll get to this Gemara. Rabbi Abbo says that the curse of a wise man, even on condition, it comes true. If a tzaddik says, if you don't do this and this and this, you'll get cursed. Fine. So even if the person does it and does what the tzaddik wants, he still will end up with that curse. Gemara says, how do we know this? We know this from this story over at Shmuel, where Eli said, like this Hashem will do to you, like this Hashem will do to you, if you hold back from me. And we see he goes and tells him everything, doesn't hold back anything. And then what indeed happened to Shmuel? What happened to Shmuel is that his children did not follow his path. Now, so what does that mean? So what was the curse? If you notice carefully, what did Eli say? He says, like this Hashem should do, and like this Hashem should do. What do you think that this and this was? You'll have children like mine, like this, like Chafni, and like this, like Pinchas. You're gonna have not such good kids like me if you don't tell me. So he told him. Right? So even though he told him, it came true, because we see that his children did not go in his path. So we see that this curse that he cursed him, even though it was on a condition, it came true. So you gotta be very careful the kinds of things you say, and that indeed they could have ramifications, even if the person does everything you ask him to do.
The era doesn't say actually what Hashem told him directly. It doesn't describe it. We find out too early that this is what happened. Where does Hashem tell Shmuel this is what's going to happen?
The previous four psuk to Eli. It's generalities. I know it's not specifics, but it's very bad. Hashem is saying, whoever hears what's going to happen, their ears are going to ring. On that day, I will begin to do the things I
said. I thought that was for Eli, not for Shmuel.
He told it to Shmuel. He says, this is what I'm going to do to Eli.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah. So that,
why come Shmuel is, his sons are not going to?
Because Eli gave Shmuel a curse.
So Eli gave him a curse.
That's what I said. Eli said, tell me what you heard in the prophecy, and if you don't tell me what you heard in the prophecy, then like this and like this Hashem should do to you.
Mm-hmm. So Eli, he was still a prophet at that time, Eli, because we already decided he lost his prophecy.
Yeah, so who said he? So well, why do you think he asked?
So why does that apply to him then?
He's a tzaddik, not a prophet. Oh, okay. He's a tzaddik.
Okay.
So tzaddik says things. It comes true.
I thought it was because of the
prophet. Right. Okay, so let's see what happens in Pasuk Yudches. Vayaged lo Shmuel es kol advarim. So Shmuel told him all the things that Hashem said. V'lo chiched mimenu. He didn't hide back anything. He told everything that he heard from Hashem. Vayomar, and Eli says, Hashem who? He is Hashem. Hatov be'enav yaseh. That which is good in his eyes, he will do. Okay, so there's a number of aspects over here. Number one is an interesting question here. It says, Vayomer Hashem who? He is Hashem. So Yud Kei Vav Kei, that's the name of Hashem that means mercy. And he's saying, and he's going to do good in his eyes. But what do you mean is mercy? Mercy, we just heard a very terrible prophecy. So what's going on over there? So we'll see what the Malbim has to say about this. So Shmuel tells over all the details. And he's hearing that, you know, Hashem is angry at him because he didn't listen to the Navi before. Remember, Elkanah beforehand warned him, he didn't seem to do anything, you know, after Elkanah warned him. And he's saying, Hashem hu atov beinav yaseh. So Malbim explains that besides the simple meaning is that he's justifying the law. He's matzdik esed, he's saying, okay, if Hashem says it's the law, it must be the right thing and finished. But also, it's the difference between, as we said before, if Hashem says something before a decree is made and after a decree is made. He says, before a decree is made, without an oath, so really Hashem doesn't want to do it. And he hopes it'll be nullified with tshuva. And in other words, when Hashem gives a prophecy that bad's going to happen, but it's not a decreed yet, that means it could still be stopped. So when God issues such a decree, it is not good in God's eyes, such a decree. Because it could still be stopped, and He wants it to be stopped. And He wants someone to do tshuva. So that's not good in Hashem's eyes. But once Hashem makes the decree, with an oath, that means now it's to the point where it's not going to come back, then it's good in His eyes that it should come true, because this is the will of Hashem that it should happen. Once it's the will of Hashem that it should happen, then it has to be good. And therefore, it shouldn't be nullified. Because it's that point already where tshuva isn't going to help anymore. And if you're going to do tshuva, it might mess up the whole thing. Because already the decree is there, the damage is done, it's not fixable. So if it's not fixable, then now if Hashem is saying, that's it, game over, it's got to happen, then a person will say, well, then this must be good. the punishment I'm going to get.
Going shul at this point is really not recommended.
Yeah, you can't turn things back. I mean, you always should do tshuva. We're not saying you shouldn't do tshuva.
So what would be the perfect
for you? It's always good to do tshuva. You know, sometimes tshuva, at least it gets you closer to Hashem, but the tshuva will not stave off the punishment.
Right.
And that's what we said. That's the punishment for Chil Hashem. For Chil Hashem, the Gemara says, for Chil Hashem, you know, even tshuva, Yom Kippur, suffering still doesn't clean the slate. Death has to ultimately clean the slate. And that's what, at the end of the day, what you want is that the slate should get cleaned. At the end of the day, after the punishments and after the suffering, you want that at least it should be cleaned out now. So at the end of the day, you want to sit in Olam Haba with Hashem. So how are you going to sit in Olam Haba with Hashem if you've at least done tshuva? If you don't do any tshuva, you're not going to get any Olam Haba. So saying, okay, if that's what Hashem's going to do, and he's not going to change his mind anymore, then I guess that is what is good. Now, he didn't say that before when Elkanah told him the horrific prophecy. Remember, after Elkanah's horrific prophecy, he doesn't say not anything at the end of Parakvayis. He doesn't get his sons to do tshuva. He doesn't say, well, I guess Hashem knows what's good to do, because he sensed it wasn't good. He knew it wasn't a total decree at that time. But he figured, what can I do? I can't tell my kids what to do. They won't listen to me. That's what he felt. And try again.
He still could have done it.
But I guess he felt it's just not going to help. So, you know, it's not a very good thing, and there's nothing for me to say. So the truth is, he really should have tried one more time. And again, even if he would have tried and they would have said no, who's to say that Eli's entire family forever would be punished? Maybe just his two sons would be punished. We don't know. And since we don't know, and certainly Eli did not know, he should have tried. And since he didn't try, now he's stuck. But now at this point, he hears that that's it. All right, so that's it, then I guess this is what Hashem wants. And that, I think, is an important thing people have to learn. That sometimes, you know, you get into certain situations in life where you realize that, you know what, you know, you're davening to Hashem, let's say someone should get better, and, you know, they're mamish on their deathbed. You know, we've tried everything, everything's tried, and so then, you know, at that point, you realize there is a gzar din. There is a gzar din. You know, we're not saying in general if you get a bad report, long-term nature, but if the person's like holding right at the very end and they're on their dying breath and the cancer has totally taken over the person, you know, you have to get to the point where you got to say Hashem is doing good what's in his eyes. You have to say, and that's it. You can't say, no, stop it, stop it, stop it. It comes to the point. You realize there's exert in it, and you have to be able to accept what he does, and there's a certain point where acceptance becomes importance, and you can't keep denying this and saying it's not fair, it's not right, and all those things. So Eli at least teaches us how to accept the bad judgment when it comes. Okay, so now you understand why he uses the Shem Hashem. He uses the Shem Hashem because at the end of the day, for Hashem to give the final punishment where it'll bring atonement, that is a kindness. At the end of the day, you know, if Hashem says, I'm going to bring you something bad, but it's not after the decree, so it really means Hashem doesn't want to bring the bad. So that isn't a very judgmental type of speech. But when Hashem has already decided, this is what has to be done, this is what will be done, and this seems to be the only cure for what's being done, then that's also all, you know, remember the midah of rachamim comes before the midah of justice. Because all justice is only because Hashem loves you. So ultimately, when he has to mete out the punishment, it's going to come from a sense of compassion and love. Okay. It's interesting, when he says the word be'enav, you notice it's missing a yud. Be'ez ayin yud nun vav, there should be a yud between the nun and the vav. And, you know, it's got to be a reason. So, it appears be'enav would mean in his eye, as opposed to his eyes. Let Hashem do good in his eye, as opposed to doing good in his eyes. So, it could, you know, so it's a question. Something to think about. And, you know, he's hoping, I guess, that, you know, when Hashem does have to do the punishments, it should be, you know, like, not with both eyes, not with complete sense of total focus and not letting anything go and totally punishing to such a devastating stage. But, you know, maybe do it with only one eye, not so precise. Don't make it so unbearable and so difficult to go through. That could be what he's hinting at over here. Okay, maybe to lessen the punishment a little bit. He says, I know I'm going to get it, but don't do it with both eyes. Let them do what's good in the one eye, but not in both eyes. Perhaps. Okay, Yates. So now, the next three psukim will basically tell us how Shmuel grows and grows in stature. Because as Hashem is preparing the seeds of destruction for the Jewish people in the next chapter, very sad seeds of destruction are coming in the next chapter, he has to prepare the salvation at the same time. And he's preparing that by getting Shmuel ready for the tasks that he's meant to do, and by raising Shmuel's stature in the eyes of the Jewish people. Pasuk Yates. Vayigdal Shmuel, and Shmuel grew. Vashem hayo imo, and Hashem was with him. Vlohipil mikol dvarav orza. And simple meaning is, none of the words that came from him, those words did not fall to the ground. So, the Malbim explains in this and the next few psukim, there's going to be three points of Shmuel's level of prophecy that are happening over here. So, the first point is that it says, Hashem is with him. Meaning to say, he has the Ruach HaKodesh, he has the Divine Spirit within him, on a constant basis, A. And B, and nothing fell from his words to the ground. That shows that he was a true Navi. Because we learn in Sefer Dvarim, that if you're not sure if a Navi is a true Navi or not, you test him out. See what his prophecies are. And if he's correct to the detail, then you know he's a true prophet. So, we see that over here, it was exactly as whatever he said, it always came true. Nothing fell to the ground. Everything came true. So that's the first interpretation, the first point over here. Now, can also be, another interpretation the commentaries say, is it can also be that it's going back to a reference to Chana's prayers. Chana's prayer was that, you know, that he should be a person, he should be a servant of God, and everything, Hashem, and everything Hashem promised should come true in Shmuel, and indeed, we could be saying it's a reference to Hashem's words. In other words, Shmuel grew, and everything that Hashem had told, had promised through Eli, to Chana, it all came true. He became the kind of person he was meant to be. But the simpler pshat is referring all to Shmuel. Shmuel, in and of himself, was an amazing guy. In of himself, they saw he was a prophet. Now, Pasuk Chaf goes on to the next point. Vayeda kol Yisrael, and all the Jews knew, Midon va'ad Beersheva, from Don, way up on the north, until Beersheva, all the way to the south. Ki neman Shmuel anavi l'Hashem, that Shmuel was believed as a Navi to Hashem. So now, the second point is, not only was he a Navi for his own self, that he was an amazing person, right? That Hashem, you know, has the prophets say things, you know, with intelligence, and that the truth is known. But more than this, it is clearly that he is a messenger for the Jewish people. And he has an impact on the Jewish people. Right? That's the second point. And that's what it means. That everybody knew about him. From Dan ad Beersheva, that he is a trusted servant of Hashem, and he will become the vehicle between them and the Jewish people. All right, so that's the second point. In other words, it was confirmed and known to everybody. It's very widespread how great he was. And more than that, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, and this is a critical new addition. Let's see Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayosef Hashem leheiraos b'shilo. And Hashem continued to be seen in Shiloh. Here it's spelled with a hey. Ki niglo Hashem el Shmuel b'shilo. Because Hashem revealed himself to Shmuel in Shiloh. Here Shiloh spelled with a vav. Bidvar Hashem, with the word of Hashem. So what's being added over here? So we're saying, Malbim says that this, remember we said, when Shmuel brought the age of prophecy, it now came to others. Now it was a new age where prophecy would come to other people. So this flow that Hashem was bringing out to Shmuel was so overwhelming, so it passed over him, and now it was able to go on to other prophets, smaller prophets, students of prophets. And even though they're level of prophecy was much smaller than Shmuel, but because it was just like a much smaller amount than his, but still in all, Shmuel continued to receive full prophecies from Hashem, and it was so abundant that it was able to come on to others, and prophecy would continue as it were in Shiloh. So it was not something that he only benefited from, but others benefited from this new age of prophecy as well. So, why is the word Shiloh changed spelling in the same pasuk? That's something that, that must be of some relevance. It says Hashem appeared to him in Shiloh with a Hashem continued in Shiloh with a hay, because Hashem appeared, revealed himself to Shmuel in Shiloh with a vav. So what will be the understanding over there? So if we think over here, it's two different references now. The first time it says Shiloh with a hay, it means Hashem showed himself to the other Jews, the other prophets. And it's Lehei Ra'os. Lehei Ra'os is a lower level of revealing himself. The second half of the Vav says Hashem is Nigla. He reveals himself, and this is to Shmuel, and that's with the Vav. So we could say like this. We know with the name of Hashem is a Yud-Hei, Vav-Hei. Yud-Hei, Vav-Hei. There's the first Yud-Hei, and that, as we said, refers to the aspect of Hashem that's giving to the world. The Yud and the Hey, as we said on Shabbos, the Yud means it's a very small letter, it's the smallest letter, that refers totally to spirituality. Hey has a numerical value of 5, which is a hand. And it's like Hashem's hand wants to give prophecy to the world now. It's the greatest gift Hashem can give you. The greatest love and kindness is to give of Himself, to give prophecy. That's the Yud and the Hey. Now, Shiloh is the place where it is received, because that's the beacon where it should come. So now the last two letters of Hashem's name is the Vav and the Hey. So as it were, Shiloh represents the completion of the Vav and the Hey. The Vav Hey, what does that refer to? It now refers to the receiving aspect of the blessings of Hashem. And if you look, so now you have the Hay of Shiloh, which is the third letter of Hashem's name, and then the Vav of Shiloh, which is the fourth letter of Hashem's name. And who is said in reference to who? Tiniglo Hashem Shmuel b'Shiloh with the Vav. So Shmuel's connected with the letter Vav, meaning to say Vav is the third letter. Vav is like the arm that's able to enable the hand to take. So now Shmuel, because of his greatness, he becomes like the arm that allows the rest of the prophets, which is the hay, to receive the giving of Hashem. Because again, the hay is the letter 5, which is a hand. So he enables the hand to be able to take. So therefore, the Pasuk, you could say, is hinting to the idea that the whole idea of an age of prophecy coming to the Jewish people is really the fulfillment of Hashem in this world. It's the Yud-Hei and the Vav-Hei. It's the ultimate reflection of Hashem's love for the Jewish people, that He is sharing Himself with the Jewish people. People are now prophets. People are now getting communications from Hashem and feeling closeness to Hashem. That's a beautiful thing. So it's hinted to in the fact that the Yud-Hei is always there. The Yud-Hei is always there. Hashem always wants to give. The question is there the Vav-Hei? The Vav-Hei is the recipients of that giving. So Shmuel, in that word Shiloh, with this Shiloh spelt once with a hay and once with a vav, once in relationship to Shmuel as a vav, and once in relationship with the rest of the prophets as a hay, this brings the full connection to Klal Yisrael.
Can I just try another?
Sure.
Is it like lo mean to him, like tain lo give to him? Like, are you not, is that right?
Lo means to him.
Right, so let's say that God gave to Shiloh with the hay was to
her. Law means her. Law means her. I'm going, yeah, law, yeah, means him. Law means her.
I was just going to say in general, because Rabbi said that gave to prophecy in general, but specifically on maybe a different level directly to him, which is why Shiloh would spell woman vav only.
That could fit in just as well, because Lehei Rose the Shiloh with the hay could mean to her. And to her. To her would mean like the weaker prophets.
Yeah, or the city, everybody.
Remember, even in the divine name, we know in general the letter Vav is a symbol of a man, of a boy, and a hay of a girl. I don't want to get into why. Vav and hay. And that's part of the Yud Hay and the Vav Hay. So he was, as opposed to stronger of the prophets, so it's the Vav. Lo, to him, is like the male of prophecy, as it were. And then the lower prophets, as it were, is like the female aspect of prophecy, where they're, you know, in other words, the way of the male is to conquer. So he conquered prophecy. He brought it back into this world. He conquered it. The other Nevi'im, the smaller Nevi'im, they're taking what he brings in and making use of it as best as they can. And that's the female aspect of using what's being brought in and doing what one can to bring it into one's home. So it's the same idea. It's the same idea. It's those end letters of the Vav and Hey. But certainly a beautiful era of prophecy is dawning over here. Now, there's a very interesting, you know, you have it many times, and we might as well go through it at this time. There's a piece from Reb Tzadok over here. Okay, and I want to go through it for a couple minutes, because we came across the terminology from Dun to Be'er Sheva. Dun to Be'er Sheva. So, like, why, of all the places, is Dun and Be'er Sheva picked? It's a simple answer. Dun is the most northern place, and Be'er Sheva is the most southern place, which is certainly true, but there's got to be something more to that. So he says something very interesting. It's not a long piece. It'll take a few minutes. But it's a very... This is Reb Tzadok in the Sefer, Kol Beit HaMincha Chelek Beis. So he explains like this. We'll read it. He says, Be'er Sheva... Why is it simply called Be'er Sheva? Kisham Nishbu Shnem. Because that's where, you know, Avram made the oath with Avimelech. He made the oath. They both made an oath. It was a Be'er, the well of Sheva, where there was a Shvuah. That's a simple meaning. But Be'er Sheva, and Yitzchak made an oath. Yitzchak made an oath there. They all made oaths over it. So he's saying like this, Be'er Sheva, who could say Eretz Yisrael. Be'er Sheva is the edge of Eretz Yisrael. It's on the side. See it on your map there? It's going to be on the southern part, all the way at the bottom. Do you see it?
They don't have Be'er Sheva on this map.
Right here. Under the word Shimon.
Oh, yeah, right there.
Yeah, you see it?
Yes.
Okay. So, Kamo Shenemar, as it says, he quotes in Sefer Shmuel, Midon vad Be'er Sheva, from Don until Be'er Sheva. Why? So he brings a famous verse from Proverbs. Well, not the total verse, but the idea. He says, Ki yesh leitz upesi. There's a concept of a leitz. A leitz is a mocker, a scorner. And there's a concept of a pesi. A pesi means, as we explained in Shabbos, someone who could be seduced. Sheim shtei k'tzavot. They are two extremes. K'moshe shamati al drashas chazal, as I heard, as it explains a statement of the rabbis in the Medrash. And here's the pasuk. This is the pasuk, the Medrash on the pasuk from Mishlei. It says, Leitz takeh. What do you do to a leitz? What do you do to a scoffer? How do you deal with him? You hit him. You hit a scoffer. So who's that referencing to? Zeh Amalek. That's Amalek. Amalek represents the quintessential scoffer. They joke around at everything. They make a joke of everything. And then the pasuk says, "Upesiyarim," and the seduced one will become cunning. Will learn from that. Ze Yisrael. That's a reference to Yisrael. That's the Medrash. The Medrash says, if you want to know who's the best example of a mocker, you're supposed to hit. That's Amalek, and that's what we do with Amalek. Something you can do with Amalek. You can't reason with Amalek. You just beat them. Pesi, these one who gets seduced, he could become clever. That's a reference to Yisrael, who did become clever. He did keep the Torah eventually. So now, he explains what this means. Because we know, there's another verse, and we explained this on Shabbos. It's just interesting, we said this all on Shabbos, so it fits in. It says, Pesi mamin l'chol davar. A Pesi, one who can be seduced, he believes in everything. Right? He's so gullible, he'll believe whatever you tell him. So what happens to someone who is like that? What will be the negative aspect of such a person? So the we go on and says, he believes everything to the point to umilei avodos l'chol davar. He winds up serving everything. And in the brackets he says that we know Yisro tried every avodah zarah in the book. So what does that mean? It means if you're a pesa, you're one who's seduced, it means you always go after the new fad. Because you're so gullible, you believe anything. And therefore, it's because you just let your emotions carry you over here. And therefore, you're not necessarily making a free will choice as free as you think it is. But rather, you know, the next exciting thing comes along. Oh, I think that's it. I think that's it. If you can be seduced, that means you will eventually serve any idol worship. You'll be into everything. Right? And that's not necessarily, you know, the best thing. And it could lead you to worshiping every idol that's in the books. On the other hand, the lates, what do you know about a lates? A mocker, he's the exact opposite. Ein ma'amin klal, he doesn't believe in anything. He's the atheist. Ve'eino oyve klal, and doesn't worship anybody. So these are the two extremes. A malik is the lates. A malik, he's not impressed by anything. He doesn't get seduced by anything. Nothing. Even the truth, he doesn't get seduced by. Everything he says, big deal, big deal. And he makes a joke about it. When you make a joke, you tear it down. He tears things down. He says nothing has a value. It's the exact opposite of being seduced. And therefore, you can't get him to do anything. He knocks every single thing. Why don't you try to... No, it's not going to work. It's silly. He makes a joke about it and says, see, why would anybody want to do it? You're all laughing. See? He doesn't do anything. That's the lates. So with a guy like that, the only thing you can do with such a guy is to smash him. Right? Because they can't learn. You know, if you are a lates, that means you will not hear anything from anybody. That means you have no potential of learning. So a guy like that, the only choice you have to hit him. A molek, what does a molek say? There is no God. There is no purpose to the world. Whatever you say, there's no purpose at all. Don't be into anything. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we'll die. And there's nothing, you can't reason with the guy, you can't do anything with the guy. And ultimately they will wreak havoc with the world. So you've got to destroy them. There's no negotiating with the lates. On the other hand, a pesi could become clever if we seduce him into the right track. It's possible. Yisro eventually took Judaism. With the fact that he was a pesi. With the fact that he could go after everything. But that means he could also go after Yiddishkeit too. So that's him. So what's the right path? He says, Ula olam ha'emtsoi hu kava yosher. Really, the middle path is the right path. But on the other hand, he says, even every extreme path can have a part of holiness to it. An extreme pesi is no good, basically, because you're just going after everything. The extreme lates, the mocker, is also not good because he's close to everything. But it's perhaps you can use, but every mida, every characteristic, even in the extreme, can be used in the extreme for good. The extreme pesi, you're going to say, isn't good. The extreme pesi isn't good because he's into everything. Shouldn't be into everything. The extreme lates is no good. He's into nothing. Shouldn't be into nothing. But maybe each one, even in the extreme realm, there's a time to use the extreme under a certain condition. So he's going to explain. He says, "Avol yesh gam ketzei kedusha uleprokim utov." But sometimes even the extreme has a side for holiness, and at that time it will be good. So let's see now. Dun. Now we're going to come to Dun and Beersheba. V'dun hu lashon avodah zarah. Dun basically is really a reference to idol worship. As it says in Shabbos, the word done is an aspect of idol worship. I'm not going to get into why, but Gemara says that. And we know that done were the first to get into idol worship. The Pesel Micha, Umaleim Avodas. They did the Pesel Micha. They did all kinds of idol worship the whole time. So what do you see from that? So done themselves was the real Pesi as well. They get into all the things they shouldn't get into. And to an extreme. L'chein Amru, and therefore the rabbi said, but it's very interesting what Dun was able to be connected with. He says, Ein l'chol gadol b'shvatim Yehuda. Who's the greatest tribe? It's Yehuda. V'yared, who's the lowest tribe? Midun. There's nothing lower than Dun. But what happened when he had to build a Mishkan? v'nishtatfu b'molechas ha-mishkan v'nibin beis ha-migdash, but we also had done involved in the building of the Mishkan and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. We had that as well. Right? The people who were involved with Betzalel, there was somebody from Shevet Dan, Aholiyah from Shevet Dan, helped him out. And same with the Beis HaMikdash, helping out Shlomo, I forgot the name. It was someone from Shevet Dan. So it's interesting how you have Shevet Dan, the lowest, is together with the highest. Of course, you need that to close the circuit of all the Jews and all that. But that's what it says in Gemara Megillah. Ki Amar, it says, HaKoifer B'Avodah Zarah, someone who denies idol worship, Nikra Yehudi, he's called the Yehudi. That's Yehuda. He's the greatest. Shua Kofer B'Avodah Zarah, he denies all the foreign worshippers, the foreign idols. But V'Don, HaKatzeh HaKron, he's the other extreme, Molei Avodah Zarah, full of Avodah Zarah. But what was the Beis HaMikdash at the end of the day? Ubinyan Beis HaMikdash, who Avodah needed a lot of work. So there's the guy, you know, who could be seduced enough to do the avoda that's the best avoda, the most important avoda. So even though they had been using it for bad, you know, you gotta say, listen, we need someone to help build the naysayers. It's not gonna work. You get all the naysayers. You know, we sinned with the golden calf. What's it worth it to have a small little puny mishkan? We really could have had a bigger mishkan, but now that we sinned, what's it worth it? So you need someone who's not the negative one. You need someone who says, listen, you know, maybe it'll work. The gullible type. The one who could be seduced. So Shevet Dan was the one who did partner, and once you get him going, he'll do a lot of things for you. So therefore, he partnered it. Vitzarach Shitur Shneim, he needed both of them. Ki Yehuda hu Shlema Samasa. Yehuda is the perfection in action. Ki Yadua. Didavad HaMelech HaShol Meirish Shlemas. Kedav HaMelech means perfection. He's the one who's into that, and therefore get the one who has perfection of service, who'll take the one who'll be seduced into service, and we can seduce him into doing the right thing. So that's where you see done, the aspect of done can be used for good. See, done is at the edge. Why are they the edge of Eretz Yisrael? Because they are the edge. They're extreme. That's why a shevet on the geographically on the edge is philosophically on the edge. Is character-wise on the edge. They are the one who are the pesi. They'll believe in anything. Okay, so we've got to harness that to believe that you could bring Hashem into this world by building a Beis HaMikdash. You need to be a little bit of a pesi for that too. Well, I'd say, you know, we're not going to bring Hashem into this world. He's not going to come into this Beis HaMikdash. That's crazy. I don't believe it. Don says, why not? I could believe it. So you have to sometimes allow yourself to be seduced for the good and to put all your efforts into something. You understand? So that's the good side. It could go very bad, it could go very good. And that's what it means to be on the edge. Be on the edge. Dun is the extremist. He's the pesi. The pesi is, by definition, an extremist. A pure pesi. He'll do everything. He'll go from this to this to that to that to that to that. What's best is to be smack in the middle. Smack in the middle is the best. A little bit of pesi, a little bit of lates. But you understand? That's the pesi. Vizel, in the last paragraph here. Vizel pesi de kedusha. This is the aspect of the pesi of holiness. The mokum tsarech, in a place where you need it, which is avoda kebeis hamigdash, where you need to do such work to build a beis hamigdash. That's where you need it. And that's what it says in the medrash. Pesi yamal chaldover is Moshe. Pesi will be everything. That's also Moshe. Shuno Sena Torah Mlema Vodasamasi. He gives the Torah that's filled with things we gotta do. So there you have the extreme edge, which is done. And now the southern edge. Velates the Kedusha. What's the lates? What's the scoffer of holiness? He says, no, I don't believe in it. I'm not gonna do it. He mocks it. Who's the one of holiness? Who Be'er Sheva? That's Be'er Sheva. What's Be'er Sheva? He's Aromes Lamidas Shabbos. It's hinted to in the word, which is the attribute of Shabbos. Hamachuna Bezoar Be'er Sheva, Bas Sheva, which is hinted to in the Zohar as Bas Sheva, the daughter of seven, meaning it's the number seven. It's the seventh well also. The seventh is the seventh day of the week, which is Shabbos.
It's called
I understand, but it's close enough. It's close enough. It's still Sheva, but Sheva is the seventh day of the week. It's the seventh well, represents what everything seven represents. Kiyodua, he's saying it's a hint. Be'er Sheva is a hint to Shabbos. Which is what? Shuha Menucha, which is rest. And what is it? Vehedra Avoda, it's denying to do work. To keep Shabbos, you have to have the attribute of being a late to the extreme, in the holy way. People are saying, you know, it's important, you gotta work every day of the week, because you gotta make a lot of money. The guy says, are you kidding? What a joke. You don't have to work 7 days a week. 6 days a week is enough. I don't believe that stuff. I don't believe that stuff. He says, well, if you want to be normal, you gotta violate the Shabbos. He says, why? Remember, the Leitz does nothing. So to keep Shabbos, you have to do nothing. So I don't buy into that baloney. The guy says, oh, you gotta be real. Who says you have to be real? You have to live in reality. Who says you have to live in reality? He mocks the system that says you have to work. Because ultimately, the Leitz, at the end of the day, doesn't do anything. So you have to focus. I'll be a Leitz regarding those who want me to work on Shabbos. I'll scoff at that. So that's Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva, seventh well, Shabbos. Shabbos needs, in a holy way, the extreme of, they say, aren't you gonna watch the World Cup today? Guy makes, what World Cup? Who needs World Cup? It's gornish, a joke. Mocks the World Cup on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you mock the whole world. The whole world that wants you to think that the other 6 days are real. You mock, the other 6 days of the week, you don't mock it. You live in those 6 days. But on Shabbos, you mock it and say there's nothing to it. Vehem shtei ktzavos. Those are the two extremes. Which, again, you don't usually want to operate in the extremes, because usually the extremes are unhealthy, but there could be a healthy aspect of that extreme. But where's the middle ground? Well, if Be'er Sheva's way in the south and Dun's way in the north, where's the middle ground? Va'emtzahu Yerushalayim. And the middle is Yerushalayim. Well, Makom Asher Yivchar, that's the place that Hashem has chosen. What we want to have is not to be an extreme late, not to be an extreme pessy. You want to have a little bit of pessy, a little bit of late, in the times where it's appropriate to be that way. When the whole world wants to tell you Yiddishkeit is not correct, you laugh at them, you mock them. That's the time to mock the rest of the world. Not all the time. You don't mock everything. You mock certain things. You have to know and be extreme when you mock that. Say, I'm not even interested at all. I'm not buying into that at all. On the other hand, to be seduced. So you don't normally want to get. You don't want to be seduced by all the mishigasim of the world. But to be seduced to do some avodas Hashem. Yeah, and nobody else wants it. I'll be seduced. I'm willing to try it. So that's that healthy balance to use them at the right times. That's what it means now. That from Dun to Be'er Sheva. Now you begin to see how that reflects of how the totality of what the Jews are. And they're within those extremes. That's what Eretz Yisrael is, within those extremes. And to live in Eretz Yisrael, you have to have those extremes at times. The whole world says we're ganavim. We mock them. Crazy. And then you say, got to try to build up the land. It says, what? Build up the land? How can you build up the land? I believe it. We could build up the land. It's possible we could live in Eretz Yisrael. Well, you'd be seduced. You have to know when to be an extreme in one and the extreme in the other, only for aspects of holiness. Okay, tomorrow we will begin chapter Dalet, chapter 4.
Thank you.